we come back into session, we'll move into our next agenda item, which is other business. The first item is the naming of the Honors College at WKU. President Risdale will make that presentation.
Well, it'll be a quick presentation. Most of you all know Dixie's parents and the support that they've provided to this university over the years, tangible and intangible, and Dixie being a longtime employee, but Pete's been chair, president of nearly every organization, at least our external organizations that we have at one time or another, founding member when we created the WKU Foundation. So their passion has been gifted and talented education at all levels, and I can't think of a more fitting opportunity than to put their name on our Honors College. We've had an Honors College for a dozen years or so now. And I'm recommending to the board that the college be named the Meharen College and the full official name the Dixie and Peter Meharen Honors College. That's a recommendation. We have a brief description about them in your book, but again, most of you know Dixie and Pete Meharen and what they meant to this community, to this university, and certainly to the Commonwealth for a long period of time.
Thank you, President Risdale. Are there any questions or comments, discussion?
I do have one. I think this is when I think of all the people whose name could be on that building, I can't think of any that probably have done more to advance the importance of honors students and the support for helping every student develop full potential on this campus. So I'm very pleased to see that.
They own the Meharen Chair of Gifted Studies and, of course, are solely responsible. Well, not solely. Dr. Roberts had something to do with bringing the World Council for Gifted Studies to you, but from a financial standpoint, they are the party that made that possible, and I think this will be a proud opportunity for the university and for them.
That's a move. Approval.
Second, Regent Johnson.
Second.
Regent Smith, second.
Second.
Any other questions or comments? All in favor of the naming? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Passes unanimously.
Cool.
Next item is an athletic employment contract. I'd like to call on our athletic director, Todd Stewart, to make that presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The contract is for our new head football coach, Mike Sanford. What I would point out is in the total dollar amount on there, $200,000 of that is from private money, so that's not all from our state budget. His salary is consistent with what we've paid our head football coach since 2013. And my concern would be that if we were to change that all, obviously, especially change it to a lower amount, the perception would be that we're not as committed to the program as we have been. And a lot of people have worked really hard to get the program where it is now. My personal opinion is it's never been higher. And I base that on the fact that we won our conference championship back-to-back times, back-to-back years, and we won a bowl game three consecutive years. And there's only nine programs in the country that have won a bowl game three straight years. So the perception of our program nationwide is excellent. And I want to keep that. And if we were to reduce what we pay our head coach any, I fear the perception would be we're not as committed, and it would also be used against us. I mean, the people we compete against, especially in recruiting, would be more than happy to point that out, that, hey, they're not paying this guy as much as they have. They're not as serious about this as they have been. And the last part of it is, you know, it's the part we have no control over, but it's the market. And it's incredible what some people are paying, not just nationwide, but in our own conference. I mean, this contract is in the upper half of the conference, but by no means is it at the top. And you're even seeing, you know, nationwide assistant coaching salaries. Louisville, for example, last year paid one of their assistant coaches $1.3 million. That was an assistant coach. Michigan this year is paying three assistant coaches, three of them, $1 million or more. So, you know, part of it is just remaining competitive in a very competitive landscape, but it's consistent with what we've done since 2013.
Thank you, Todd. Any region have a question or discussion?
Just one question. Could you explain just a little bit more, from where does that money come from? And I understand the market incentive, and you talked about perception and the need to pay the coach that much, such a new coach. Could you just explain a little bit more about why is it that number, and where does the money go after it's allotted?
Well, in terms of where the money comes from, I mean, Willie Taggart, the last year he was here, made $475,000. So that was money that was in the budget for that football coaching position. And then we within our own budget, have grown that from $475,000 to $600,000 just through the growth of revenues in the program. Ticket sales, Harbaugh Club sales, sponsorships. So some of that money that we generated, we allocated to the head coaching number, and then the other 200 is just private money, you know, donated from people in the community who support the program.
Okay. Regent Burge?
Todd, I certainly understand the notion of competitive marketplace. I really have one question, one comment. I recognize the competition factor, and I agree with you about perception. What I couldn't help but wonder when you said that, though, does that mean what we can expect in the future is we're always going to be paying more? Costs are going to keep going up.
Well, there's no question costs will keep going up. I mean, the cost of everything, you know, will obviously go up. But that number that's a very fair number for Conference USA. You know, where are things 3 to 5 years from now? I don't know. But I don't envision us moving off of that number by very much. I mean, I think that's a fair and a healthy number, and it's perceived as such. And, you know, I think that's where it'll be for a while.
But I'm hearing you say, to J. Todd's question, most of this is not base money. It's not university money. It's supplemented.
Well, 25% of it is. I mean, 200 of the 800.
25% is supplemented.
Yes.
Only other comment I want to make, and this is not to speak against this proposal, but it's just a reminder. I think what Todd said is so important about how we're perceived based on what we pay people. And this is often the discussion among faculty, the fact that perceptually, when you can't do anything about faculty salaries, what does that say about valuing? It was needed in the department a few days ago where they had 8 people that would have been eligible to come up for tenure next year, and there are only 2 of them going up. There are only 2 of them still here. We lose some of our best people because of our inability to be competitive in the marketplace and to send the message that our faculty and our staff are valued in ways that becomes a priority. And I know in one of the sessions yesterday where we were interviewing with the prospective president, a comment was made about the decisions that you make on putting your money where your values are. I just think that we need to remember that the same factors of valuing and marketplace competitiveness apply to all of the people inside the university community, and I'm pleased you've been able to figure out a way to make it happen for athletics. I hope we can figure out a way to make it happen for all the rest of the people that populate this community.
Anyone else?
I agree with Barbara. It's a challenge. I saw data yesterday. In fact, I'll be sending it out to the board by this afternoon. A comparison of all Kentucky universities over the last 5 years, and just to put the whole salary matter in some context with all 8 universities in KCTCS in terms of faculty staff salaries and increases. And just so you know, the competition among the university or the higher education environment in Kentucky. But Barbara's right. That's our compensation and retention are the biggest challenges we have to address in the next few years.
And the fact is, Gary, as you know, Kentucky really isn't our competition point for faculty.
I mean,
our strong faculty is hiring them nationally and internationally. And so it's even more difficult.
I agree. You're right. I just don't have the national data as at hand as I do the Kentucky data, so we'll get that to you in due course, too.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr.
I think this is a great opportunity, and I don't want to take away from Todd's presentation because we do have something we need to vote on, but Barbara's point the responsibility that we have, and we talked about scholarship earlier and how we can improve our endowment. But another way that we, this 25% lift we're talking about this hour, one way that we as individuals and citizens of this state is that when we know of someone who has the potential to endow a professorship at this university, and which we have, can look over our shoulder and see what a marvelous job we've done in the, under the tenure of Gary, we need to remind those professionals that that's a way that they can give back to their university. It doesn't have to be in brick and mortar, but to endow a professorship at this university assists us in this 25% differential. And that's another way that we can remember our colleagues that are in all over the United States of thinking, if you want to do something in engineering or biology or business or account, anywhere, we can have them make contributions to endow professorships that would help the supplemental funding. So just something, again, a challenge for all of us to recognize.
John, I just add one more comment as a perspective, because some of us have had the pleasure of sitting through the last few days and hearing people's comments. But one department head yesterday gave a statement, and Ann will correct me if I'm wrong here, but he said in 14 years as department head, he only had one occasion where he had any merit dollars to distribute, and that was pretty minimal. And I think somewhere it's just important to think about how defeatist that is and how it affects people wanting to come here to work if they don't feel there's going to be some recognition. That doesn't mean there have been no salary increases, but merit. Maybe it's not.
I'll get you updated. I don't think that's accurate, but I'll get you the historic trend line that includes merit. Would it be helpful to have a list of how many positions we have across the university that are supported by private support, professorships, chairs, and the like? Mark, can you put that together before the next meeting?
It certainly could be a challenge for us to put in any future capital campaign that we would like to double it or triple it or whatever that is, so that our constituency would understand and our alumnus that would know that if that's available, we could do. As important as brick and mortar.
Sure it is. Absolutely. Todd, let me. I want to make an observation. I don't want to ask a question. And I agree with what Barbara and Gary and John are saying. But I think we all have to recognize something I think is very important here, and that is athletics, football or basketball or baseball, projects this university. And the individuals that project those programs are the coaches, and the person that has to go out and find that right individual is sitting right over there. And we get people like Stanford and like our basketball coach and our baseball coaches who are concerned about these kids, concerned about them as students, as athletes, Todd, and you do a remarkable job of going out and finding the right person that's got that background, has got that moral compass, and that's important in parts of leadership, but it starts with you, and you do a good job, and I think that should be recognized, so I want to say that.
Thank you.
Might be a good time also to mention that during this search process, candidates were asked, and it was interesting to hear the various answers, but they all alluded to other benefits that brought to the university. A good athletics program, one of the big drive out. So I think we all recognize that Mr. Stoltz does a great job.
Well, we also understand the limits, and as Todd suggested, post cost is making $3 million a year and a $20 million four or five-year contract with $18 million of guaranteed, whatever the numbers are, but that's close. We can't pay that. We won't pay that. And so, therefore, we'll build a program and find people that we'll attract here to sustain the success we've enjoyed in recent years. And that's our world, the world in which we live. And we'll compete. We'll understand our limits, and we'll work within those limits and win.
Freddie?
Yes.
And my question that I had was going to ask, Todd answered right off the bat, is that he did provide outside funding for that salary, and I applaud that. And I would be very interested to see the list of the I think it would be good for everybody to see the list that Dr. Randall is going to provide of the, you know, endowed professorships and things. Maybe at some point figure out a way, you know, if there's a way to we can figure out somehow to fund staff positions or to do something like that and have that included in that as well, because the staff, you know, are in the same position as the faculty, and we're losing them, as I point out, you know, over 22% turnover in 2015. You know, find some way to be able to, you know, look at that, take a look at that for the first time, look at something differently and see if we can't figure out a way to include staff on those, in those types of fundraising.
Well, and one other thing I would quickly point out, you know, obviously the results of our games are in the sports pages, but we really do take our role as part of the university's overall mission very seriously. And I've always believed a rising tide lifts all boats. And there was an article, I don't know if all of you saw it, I should have sent it to you, but it was really interesting because it talked about during our bowl game this year, we played on December 20th, a primetime game, the number of clicks on our admissions pages here had nothing to do with athletics. The number of people who went to our admissions pages at Western Kentucky spiked tremendously during the 3 hours the football game was on TV. And that really is a hope of ours, is that our success results in greater exposure to the entire university and, you know, can help drive enrollment, all those things. So that, I mean, we really do take that seriously.
Jason's the one who found that article and circulated it around, as I recall, about a week ago.
251% increase in traffic during the game as opposed to before the game.
Please, somebody send that out to us.
Well, and Jace, I mean, that's, I appreciate him finding that, but, you know, obviously if you don't have a successful football team, you're not in a bowl game, and you don't have that happening. Now, it's hard to put a dollar figure on that, but, I mean, that is a byproduct of, obviously, a winning season and being in a bowl game.
Any other comments? Great comments this morning. Hear a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Regent Johnson, Regent Ridley, second. Any further discussions?
All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously.
I'd like to abstain from the vote.
Please note, Regent Ritchie, abstain. Thank you. Next item will be presented by David Porter. Remind the board that as a result of our 6 to 8 hours of training that we've taken over the fall, and Dr. Carol Cartwright, the items that he has proposed to us and other changes that Carol Cartwright has proposed to us is modernization of our bylaws are included, including the committee structures, et cetera. And so I thank Regent Porter for undertaking this Herculean act.
Thank you. For those of you who should have had a copy of the latest draft that was separate from your from the bound volume that you received before the meeting, and it has some minor changes in it that aren't substantial. And as you can see, a lot of these changes have been to kind of unify the flow of the language throughout. I have a system that flows, and also there are several changes in here that are recommended that appear that were recommended by brought to the attention of the board at the meeting with Dr. Cartwright. And essentially, one question's come up on this from the draft. You may notice that on the executive committee, on page 6 under committees, the executive committee shall consist of the chairperson, vice chairperson, and the secretary of the Board of Regents. In addition, the chairperson of the immediate past chairperson of the board is an ex officio non-voting member. And previously, the chair of the academic committee, finance committee, and student life committee were included, and that was dropped as a result of the comments at the meeting with the board that it was an effort to separate and give more independence to the academic and finance committees so that the committees could conduct the business and not interfere from an academic standpoint with the academic branch of the university. Is that, I would welcome any comments from the other board members on that.
One of the things that AGB and our committee structure had recommended was to increase the committees. We were now going to five committees, and we're 11-person board. So we're all going to be serving on at least two committees, if not more. The trend was to de-emphasize the structure of the executive committee. In fact, a lot of college boards have done away with the executive committee. Doesn't use it anymore. So, in light of that trend, you will notice that the executive committee does less, and then the other committee structures are emphasized more. And that was a reflection of her comments at our training back in November. We spent the afternoon with her going through. So, I'm just kind of adding on to David's reporter's comments. You will notice that the governance committee has three members. The rest of the structure, finance, and mission, and then student success and diversity, are still at the 3 to 5 region level. Again, from a horsepower standpoint, that will mean that we will all be serving on more than one committee, multiple committees. And again, it's important to note that our structure is that all board members are parts in attendance to all committee meetings and participate. The way our agenda structure, the way we attend, all board members come to all committee meetings. So there's always that flow of information, which I think has been excellent and served us well over the years.
I'm sure.
No, go ahead.
Are there any comments or questions on that?
Well, I have a couple. One in particular is, I'm not really understanding. I understand our training of 6 hours or whatever you had, but we've just come up and understand what our fiduciary responsibilities are and why the next move is to change the bylaws after all these years. It presents to me, I don't know why we're doing it right now, particularly with the idea that we're in the middle of a search and apparent change in our president. So that questions and has these candidates, do they understand that we're changing our governance of our board, and particularly because of just recent training? So I don't know that we've had enough time, in my opinion, that to kind of think about this, because these bylaws are the governance of this board. That's what this is. So I feel like, you know, 90 days, in my opinion, is not enough to digest and think through this, because we're not talking about how we're doing business now. When you change bylaws, you're talking about how you're going to do business 4 years, 5 years after a lot of our terms are gone. So I think we need to put more effort into it, into a 90-day period. Secondly, it appears to me after reading this, and I apologize, I only saw it over the last week, but we're putting a lot of emphasis on the chairman of the board to nominate all of the different parties, and we're putting a lot of emphasis on that, whoever that person is in the future, especially when you go to a quorum of the executive committee, only being two members. So I appreciate, Freddie, what you're saying is we do invite everybody to come, but when you look at this, the president of the university also can appoint, or the chair can appoint someone from the staff, I think, on every one of these committees. So if you have a reduced number of individuals on committees, and you, the president can also appoint someone from the staff, and again, I may be wrong, it appears that the chairman is having, wielding some pretty strong strong control of all committees and all members of the board. It would take a difficult situation to gather enough people together to change the direction of a particular action by just a simple vote. And so those are some of the general questions and comments that I have. So timing of why are we doing it now, and have we had enough time to consider all of these serious changes in the governance of this board in a short period of time with what we have on our plate going forward?
John, thank you. Thanks for your comments. I have one clarifying comment. There's no staff on the committee, only as a secretarial.
I couldn't hear you when you...
There's no appointment of staff to a committee. They only serve in an administrative role. The president of the university shall appoint a member of the staff to serve as administrative agent to the committee. So,
okay, so no vote.
No vote.
Okay, that wasn't clear. Just
no vote. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the impetus I heard coming out of our training was that it would be nice to have this refinement in place and functioning when the new president took office on July 1. So that there, this was one less thing that they would have to deal with. We clean up our bylaws. These bylaws are our bylaws, not the president's bylaws.
Sir.
And would address some of the committee structure so that we normally and naturally change committee structures on July 1, that we would have the new committee structure in place as opposed to going through a transition when the new president got here. Well, those were some of the comments. Now, the last thing, this takes two readings. So this matter will not be acted upon until April 27th, I think is our next meeting. So you have 90-plus days more. But our feeling was, again, I was reading the consensus coming out of our training back on November, which is available. I know you weren't able to attend, but it's available. We had it videoed so that that you could watch it. But if I'm, you know, this is where we are. Now, if the board desires to table it or whatnot, I understand. But.
Well, could I ask a point of clarification? How did language, and again, I've always wanted some policy on dissolution of real estate, acquisition of real estate, and that's always been something that has been a point that I would like to have as a policy. But let's just take, for example, number four. We're changing the name of the committee from Finance and Budget Committee to Finance. Again, that's just I don't know why, but anyway, that's fine. But we've adding language in here as oversight of bonding debt, bond rating, real estate, in parentheses, purchase, disposition, and leasing. So that's a new injection without a formal policy of how that has been brings to the board. If that committee now becomes the sole place of selling WKU Farm or dividing up some piece of parcel or acquiring. So those are some languages I think need more attention, and I guess that's kind of what I would like to see is how did that get in there, and where did it originate, and then at what point do we discuss those issues rather than just an individual reading, and then because the next one, if we read it today and the next one it passes, this is done.
Understand.
Yeah. So, point of clarification.
A couple of points of clarification. Committees have no authority, so they only recommend to the full board. So, the sale of anything or whatnot would come to the board as it always has through the committee recommendation. Secondly, we recognized your comments in the past about policies and having structures of policies on the disposition of real estate and those matters. So we're not developing those policies at this point, but we're putting into place a committee that will have that task, have that responsibility going forward, with the understanding that this committee is the one that supervises and authorizes that function ultimately to be sent to the full board as a recommendation. We're trying to incorporate what we thought we heard, but if this is only a first reading, more additions, changes, I've got to get started somewhere. So we can start the process, or we can table it. And if we table it, then unless we come back for special meetings, then all these the opportunity for us to approve this will be after the new president is on board.
And I don't see that as a good or bad. I'm just trying to bring these points up. As another point, and maybe a little more clarification, it does appear that we've removed the nominating committee process out of all this, and the chairman is the sole person to bring to the board for vote up or down on committee members and executive committee and so forth?
No.
And I'm not talking about the present. I'm talking about 10 years down the road. How does this affect us?
No, it's actually been changed. The governance committee, we have a governance committee now that handles all the nomination process.
Is that in the new revised, or is that in what we were handed out in the packet?
No, that's in the, it's always been there in the, this is on page
7. That's what you spent a lot of time talking about at your last, your afternoon with Carol Cartwright, was the creation of a governance committee.
So the new formation coming out of AGB was the utilization of governance committees, which will provide for board training, nominations, and again, that's on page 7.
Yeah, I've read all of this. I know on page 7 it also says that we're going from 5 members to 3. So once again, we're diluting the ability for making. I'm thinking of the ways things have happened in the past. By the time they come to the full board, if these committees do not have enough, and it's all being, I mean, it's tightening down who can authorize various things. And that's fine if that's the direction they want to go, but if the chairman's appointing the governance committee, I mean, it's all controlled by the chairman. I mean, when you run the flow, it's all being controlled by the chairman of the board.
Well, let me clarify for you. About 3 or 4 items. We have always had a nominating committee. And the nominating committee has been 3 individuals that were appointed by the chair. This function creates a governance committee which would handle nominations. Under the bylaws, the chair recommends to the board committee appointments, and the board approves those committees. And so that function, at best, is moving sideways in the function from a nominating committee into a governance committee. The number of 3 was the number that AGB throughout is typically what we find for a governance committee and the types of functions that they have. Now, if the board wants to put 5, 10, or all of us on the governance committee, that's okay. These are only recommendations. The recommendations are, again, coming from our training with AGB. That's where they're coming from. I mean, that's the basis, the resources that were used.
So this language you're saying is from the consultants that we hired, not from the board?
Correct.
Or any other party.
That was a resource material. I don't want to say the consultant was hard. The information is coming from the resource material that was provided to us by AGB, both from the training and the brochures, the pamphlets that have been handed out to us.
So this proposal is coming from where? From this body?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's being laid out today as a compilation of the things that David has worked on to put this together.
Okay. The governance committee that was introduced by AGB, and again, you all spent a lot of time talking about it at your meeting in late November, early December. You spent an hour or two talking about a governance committee, as I recall.
Well, I have no problem with the governance committee. That's not the issue. The issue is it just appears to me that we're changing the governance of this board by putting an awful lot of power in the chairman's position. And to be able to reverse that at any level, it seems to me to be quite difficult. And again, in the past, once momentum starts on something, the board is reluctant to make any changes unless there's a lot of discussion at the last minute. And what I was trying to say is that if these function as they are designed, it would be great. But in the future, if some chairman wanted to take control of every committee, I mean, it could be easily pretty much done. And that would be a direction I would think would be very cautious. So, again, once again, I'm just as I read this, it just appears we're making a lot of changes to our bylaws and the governance of this board without more thought and discussion about that. And maybe we need another working session outside of training to discuss this, to get other views. And maybe I'm the only one that feels that way. That's fine. I've read through the thing a couple times, but it just seemed like we're making some pretty drastic changes right before we hire a new president. And regardless of who the president is, this is a 10-year issue. This isn't about how quick can we get it done before the next president comes.
Well, just for maybe I'm wrong. We all went through the training back in November. If we misread that training and the comments that came out of it.
Was that the objective of the training, was to change the bylaws?
More or less. It was to enhance our understanding of board governance. And board governance originates with your committees and your bylaws. I've offered some opinions. John was not at our training. Am I misreading our...
No. I was only missed one meeting. I was at the former training. The second one, I was not.
Well...
And I've seen the videos and the whole thing, so it's not like I'm not educated on this.
About the governance committee. I do not read the governance... I think there's a void, perhaps. I don't read the governance committee as nominating the other committee members. It says specifically nominating officers. It recommends... But... I know we talked at times about changing bylaws. I didn't see the purpose of AGB to change bylaws. I saw it to train us and help us be better board members. And out of that, hopefully, we'd be better prepared to change bylaws.
Right.
So maybe that's a moot point. But technically, it does not say the governance committee appoints. It doesn't say the chair does either. It's just missing. I
don't want to get off track here on picking the governance committee out of the whole thing. I'm saying this whole general document that's been presented to us changes the governance up. Don't get focused on the governance committee. It could be the same thing about finance and budget. We have changed the dynamics of how our board operates. And if that's what we want to do, that's fine. But it just appears to me that we're kind of rushing through this whole thing after two sets of training. I don't know that... Maybe that's what everybody wants to do, but I don't see the urgency, maybe.
I assume, David, you want to finish your read, and then we'll see what the board wants to do, whether it's tabled or we consider this first reading.
Okay. John, I would offer this. I think this streamlines our bylaws and kind of makes them more cohesive because they've been amended piecemeal in the past and they've been kind of clunky in certain areas. And, remember any board member can attend any committee meeting of the executive committee and, the board has to make every decision that's adopted by the university. So, I think one of the things is the organization needs to be so that, all board members aren't on all committees at the same time. I mean, we don't want to overwork certain board members. So, I think it's a move toward improving the bylaws and just the fluid movement of issues under the right headings of academic, finance, and the other areas of the university. I don't see any agenda on it to have the president or the chair of the board other than leading the board and presiding.
I don't see it as any danger to any of the us individual board members having our say or power lessened. It's a more efficient way to do business, I think. And, frankly, I think this draft reads smoother with more fluid movement than our past bylaws have. So I just offer that.
David, for the work that you've done here, and I think certainly updating bylaws and governance is a good idea. I get the sense that there may be a need for more discussion. I have been preoccupied on another. And so I have to admit, I saw this for the first time a couple of days ago, did not realize it was coming. But others probably were much more aware than I am. But it seems like it probably would be worth a special meeting where we could discuss the meat of this. And I agree with John. I think it's a big deal when you change the governments. I remember well the discussions 20 or so years ago when you did have a chairman that was dominant. I think you even had an office next to the president's, and that didn't so I think there's a lot to talk about. We may not have time to do it today.
I would entertain a motion that we table this action until we can organize a special call meeting.
Have a motion.
Second. So would you repeat it, please?
I'm sorry?
Your motion.
Oh.
She can hear it.
I suggest that we table this motion. My motion is that we table this action until we can put a little more research and effort into organizing a specific meeting about addressing the bylaws for the Board of Regents for Western Kentucky University.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Motion by Regent Ridley, seconded by Regent Ritchie. Any discussions or comments?
Just a clarification. This was not an action to be taken. This was just a first reading, correct?
Correct.
So that motion needs to be changed because there was no action made except this was a first reading.
Well, maybe the parliamentarian needs to say it. I thought a first reading, you voted on a first reading, and in the second reading, if it was voted on, it's action. No?
To table, you can make the motion to table the discussion about it today, and or if you want
certainly,
to send it to a committee, which I believe that's what you were.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify.
I don't mean to get into
action.
And maybe this is my observations of first and second readings come from dealing with fiscal courts and local governmental bodies, but I'm sure the principle's the same. Once you have that first reading, which is appropriate, whoever's on that board votes up or down on the first reading. Then when you, but then that document is set and it's not subject to amendment at the second reading. It's either voted up or down. And if you had, let's say somebody said, okay, wait a minute, we want to change something, you have to go through a first reading again. Mm-hmm. And that's my question.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay. Am I saying yes or no, or I'm seeing somebody behind you? So if you vote, just to answer your question, Julie, in the event that you have a first reading, you cannot change this without another first reading. You have to vote it up or down without change at the second reading. Now that, based on my experience with fiscal courts, city commissions, and local governments. Rules may be different here. I don't think so. I guess that's a question.
I don't believe that that's different here.
Okay.
There's nothing in the existing bylaws that. So.
More discussion or comments? We have a motion and a second to table consideration of the bylaws and hold those for some working session in the future. Call the vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. Matt, would you please join us?
Go ahead.
By way of introduction, I don't think one is needed, but Jim Meyer is a distinguished former chair and board legion member and served on our first committee. It's most fitting and appropriate today that he join us. As we move to the next agenda item, which is consideration of the presidential appointment and related contract, the chair will, in this regard, will recognize votes by raising of the hand. And with that being said, I would like for our presidential search committee chair, Dr. Philip Bell, to present.
All right. Well, I can have several minutes to make some comments. I do want to recognize our search committee members who are all present today, starting with Cynthia Harris,
it's okay.
Tim Smith, Julie Henson, Birch, and Todd Richardson, Mr. Meyer. Over the last year, other than my wife, children, and grandchildren, the most important person in my life has been Julia McDonald.
That's sweet. That is so sweet.
That's true. And she has been absolutely invaluable to this search over the last year. She's brought organization and ideas and coordination. And everyone should know what a jewel in WKU's crown that lady over there is.
Thank you.
As we now approach one of the most important inflection points in the history of this great institution, I now beg your indulgence to allow me several minutes to reflect upon the activities of the last 12 months that have brought us to this moment in time. Because words and thoughts need to be presented carefully at occasions such as this, I have resorted to prepared remarks. I apologize for having neither the skill nor the facile intellect of our world-class forensics team that might have allowed me to speak extemporaneously. I think that everyone here today, seen it in our meeting, would agree that serving on any Board of Regents or Board of Trustees is a somber responsibility, ripe of decisions with far-reaching consequences. In many ways, it is the ultimate team sport in which individuals possess no power or authority, but as a group, our decisions carry great weight and affect so many lives. While our duties include those of a fiduciary nature, they also entail those duties of loyalty, obedience, and an abiding duty to care deeply and hold the institution in trust. Our greatest responsibility is to ensure strong and proper leadership for WKU, both now and into the future. It is worth noting that the present is one of unprecedented challenges and opportunities. If one believes that a well-educated citizenry is essential to our nation's success and even survival, then the stakes relating to our selection of a new president could not be higher. Since President Ransell's announcement 1 year ago this month, a great deal of time and effort has been expended toward discovery of a worthy successor. Under the direction of Chair Higdon, a search committee was formed and plans conceptualized. In short order, after multiple interviews, a consultant firm was engaged. Much of last spring and early summer then involved creation of a position profile within the context of an institutional review. This was accomplished with valuable input from numerous stakeholders and included 7 open forums. Subsequently, in conjunction with our consultants, literally hundreds of contacts were made, the conversations held, in search of the most qualified, best person for WKU, given our unique set of challenges and opportunities. While at times the process seemed arduous and necessarily open to criticism, nevertheless, a pool of highly qualified candidates was developed. Over time, this was further distilled to an even smaller group of truly outstanding candidates whose credentials and qualifications would make them attractive to any higher institution in our country, institution of higher learning. In no small measure, our ability to attract individuals of this caliber was a result of the transformative changes at WKU over the last 20 years. It was the result not only due to Dr. Ransfeld's inspired leadership, but just as importantly, to the high esteem with which our faculty, staff, and students are held within the world of academia. No one should doubt that Western Kentucky University is regarded as a very special place, full of promise and brimming with possibility, even if not especially in these times of historic change. I want to take a moment to give special thanks not only to all the members of the search committee for the extraordinary time and effort which they have all given so freely and willingly, but I am especially grateful to those who represented the university's most important and essential stakeholders, Dr. Barbara Birch, Anna Smith, and J. Todd Ritchie, representing faculty, staff, and students, were each vigilant in their participation, and their contributions were vital throughout. They have represented their separate constituencies with conviction and unwavering devotion and advocacy for the overall mission of our university. Along with our other search committee members, they made sure that the process from beginning to end maintained a steady focus and intent on finding the best person and the best fit for our presidency. As a result, a little over 2 weeks ago, our full board of regents was presented with a group of finalists, each highly qualified and experienced, each with impeccable resumes, each with the personal and professional reputations that would predict honor and distinction for any institution fortunate enough to acquire their talents. Over 2 days of intense interviews, our Board of Regents gave full attention and consideration to those elements of leadership felt to be the most important and compelling for WKU at this time. It became evident during those interviews that there was overwhelming support for one of those candidates to be designated as preferred. That individual, along with his spouse, has spent the last 3 days meeting with various groups on campus and in the Bowling Green community, interacting with many of our major stakeholders. Considered to be prerequisites included such qualities as a sharp intellect, with a reverence for shared governance and academic freedom, someone who could articulate a bold and inspired vision for higher education in general, and WKU in particular, before any audience, including students, faculty, staff, alumni, elected officials, the greater Bowling Green community, and beyond. We wanted someone who could understand and appreciate WKU's culture, and that other something special, which separates us from so many others. Following Dr. Ransfeld, we knew it would require a president with extraordinary people skills, who would exude charisma and energy, along with a blend of wit and wisdom. It would have to be someone who listens well and who can build consensus and create a milieu of cooperation conducive for the innovation, which will surely be necessary in an environment of increasing accountability and financial challenges. This person would have to have demonstrated integrity along with proven abilities as a manager of people and ideas. Above all, we knew that the 10th president would also have to have a track record signifying a passion for student success and academic excellence. Mr. Chairman, with the belief that we have found such a person with these uncommon gifts and abilities, I am privileged, indeed honored, to make the motion that Dr. Timothy Christian Caboni be selected today to become the 10th president of Western Kentucky University on July 1 of this year.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. The chair recognizes the motion.
Second.
And will now call for a raise of hands of anyone that would like to second. I think we have everyone's hands up. Do we know that, Julia?
Sir.
We have a second by the remainder of the entirety of the board. Is there any discussion?
I don't have a discussion, but I have a comment. May I make it?
Yes, please.
Dr. Bale complimented everybody else. But I compliment you, Mr. Hickman, on selecting Dr. Bale. He was perhaps the most extraordinary chair I have ever seen. He not only did all the work that you know he did, but I know he personally talked with candidates, did things that were designed, whether they came here or not, to make sure that they walked away from this experience in a way that they felt good about Western, and he gave honor to all of us. And I don't think you want to go into professional chairing of search committees, probably, Phil. was absolutely amazing, and I just want to thank him.
It's been a great experience, and I can tell you, being able to interact not only with our people, but all the other people that would like to have been here with us today, has been one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I thank everyone for allowing me to do that.
Thank you, Barbara. Anyone else? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously, and we send our congratulations to Dr. Timothy C. Caboni. And did you want to have a comment, Mr. President?
On behalf of the faculty and our staff, our students and our alumni, represented on the search committee and certainly on this board, we collectively want to offer our appreciation to the board, particularly Mr. Chairman, to you for your leadership throughout this process, and as has been stated, for your leadership throughout the search. I cannot imagine a more professional process or a more desirable outcome for what this board has been able to achieve over the last 12 months. So congratulations, well done, and our future's in good hands.
Thank you. Now, supplemental item is, of course, the approval of the contract, which has been disseminated to the board. So, following the hopefully the same protocol, I entertain a motion for the board's approval of a contract with Timothy C. Caboni.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Porter, seconded by Regent Smith. Any other discussion?
I have one comment. I think it's exceptionally good that the contract is so definitive and Caboni has agreed with priorities that are going to frame where this university moves down the road, and I suspect it's going to be interesting as the board works with him to develop metrics that are going to frame the future for all of us. And I also was pleased that embedded in the contract is evidence and importance of his commitment to shared governance.
Thank you, Regent Barch. Any other comments, discussion? Call for the vote for the approval of the proffered contract with Dr. Tim C. Caboni. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. echoing all the remarks, so appreciative of all the board and Mr. Jim Meyer for their service and for the process and for the result. So it's something that we can all be proud of. You have served your university. Couple announcements before we wrap up. Committee meeting on March 24th. Our second quarterly board meeting will be on April 28th. Commencement May 12th and 13th. Reminder that we will have lunch today with Dr. Caboni and his wife Casey down at the Augustine Center at noon. Any other matters for the board before we adjourn?
Sure, you will. Pull the board on a called meeting date as soon as possible, I would presume, and we'll just work out a time with you.
Anyone else? Anything else? Again, thank you. I will entertain a motion that we adjourn.
So move.
Motion by Regent Johnson.
Second.
Second by Regent McKinney. All in favor, aye.
I'll see you soon.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're retired.